Days at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC right after the internet.
On Straight Talk Africa this week, how should Britain's Queen Elizabeth be remembered? As many reflect on her life, her death has sparked new worldwide debate about the long and painful history of British colonial rule. We'll bring you the latest from the United Kingdom as it prepares to lay its longest reigning monarch to rest. We'll also look at King Charles III's relationship with African nations and whether the British monarchy will survive a modern, changing world. Straight Talk Africa starts now. Hello there and welcome. Thank you so much for joining me. I'm Heidi Adams. The British monarchy is entering a new era, even as questions swirl about its ability to survive after ascending to the throne upon the death of his mother, Queen Elizabeth II. Britain's King Charles III addressed the nation and the Commonwealth. Henry Ridgewell takes a look back.
In a day of somber ceremony, an unscripted moment of warmth and humanity between the new king and his people. Arriving at Buckingham Palace in London Friday, King Charles III and his wife, Camilla, stepped out of their car to greet the crowd of well-wishers, a son grieving the loss of his mother, a nation sharing his pain.
This kind of feels like it hasn't sort of hit yet. It's just very strange. It's a very strange feeling.
Upset, emotional, wondering what's going to happen next.
It's quite a very sad day for the country. We've known the Queen for almost part of our life. It's going to be very different for us to. We've always said the Queen. But I guess we are going to adjust to calling Charles the King now.
British lawmakers dressed in black gathered for a special session of Parliament.
While she understood the inescapable nature of duty, which sometimes must have weighed upon her heavily, she also delighted in carrying it out, for she was the most devoted monarch.
King Charles III then held his first meeting with the new Prime Minister, Liz Truss, in only her third day in the job. The King then addressed the nation from Buckingham Palace.
As the Queen herself did with such unswerving devotion, I too now solemnly pledge myself, throughout the remaining time God grants me, to uphold the constitutional principles at the heart of our nation.
The King finished with a tribute to his mother.
To my darling Mama, as you begin your last great journey, to join my dear late papa, I want simply to say this. Thank you. Thank you for your love and devotion to our family and to the family of nations you have served so diligently all these years. May flights of angels sing thee to thy rest.
Across London, the choir of St. Paul's Cathedral sang in memory of Elizabeth. 2,000 members of the public were invited to attend the service. The modified national anthem was sung officially for the first time. God Save the King. Britain has lost its matriarch, the thread that across seven decades linked the post-war generation with the modern world, who personified its values and its image. The grief is felt deeply. But as the second Elizabethan age comes to an end, a new era begins under King Charles III. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
Henry Ridgewell there with that recap for us. Now to London, where Associated Press correspondent Philip Crowther is standing by at Westminster Hall. This is where the Queen's body is lying in state. Good afternoon, Philip. This is quite a momentous day, isn't it? The Queen's body has now made the long journey from Scotland to London, where, of course, she was born. What is the feeling amongst the British public today?
Let me tell you, it's gone very, very quiet here along the procession route in central London, and particularly on the Mall right now. That is where that procession is taking place right now. We can hear the bell of Big Ben that's just out of shot here at the Houses of Parliament. We can hear that toll every minute. We can hear cannon shots, also one every hour. This is all part of that procession that is taking the casket that is carrying Queen Elizabeth II from Buckingham Palace to Westminster Hall, that is inside the Houses of Parliament here. Those people lining the route right now, they have spent a long time to be able to see this moment, a very solemn moment for the people of the United Kingdom, and of course a particularly somber moment for those who are accompanying that casket. The casket right now on top of a horse-drawn gun carriage, and the members of the royal family that are accompanying it. Of course, King Charles III, who has had a very difficult, of course, few days, and a very busy few days for him as well, taking up this role as king and having to go to many, many places. We saw him in Edinburgh also accompanying the casket of the Queen. He has gone to Belfast as well and will also be going to Cardiff to receive condolences there. He is right now walking behind the casket that is carrying his late mother. Alongside him, his siblings as well. That includes Princess Anne, the Princess Royal. She has accompanied the body of the late Queen throughout her journey from the Balmoral Estate in the Highlands in Scotland to London right now, and eventually, of course, after the state funeral, to Windsor Castle on Monday. Also part of that procession are the sons of King Charles III, William, first of all, who is now the Prince of Wales, the heir to the throne. Harry is also there accompanying that casket. All of this meticulously planned, of course. This procession left Buckingham Palace, the home of the Queen, at exactly 22 minutes past the hour. This procession will arrive here at the Houses of Parliament for a short service, and thereafter, the lying in state of the late Queen will begin here.
Philip, very briefly, we have very little time. I just want to know, what do you know about the funeral arrangements, who's expected to attend, and will the public be able to take part?
Well, the public has had many opportunities and will have more opportunities over the next 4 days to see the casket during this lying in state. Here at Westminster Hall, there will be 4 days for people who have been lining up for days already to be able to pay their respects in person. There was also the possibility for people in Edinburgh to see the casket inside St. Giles's Cathedral for a period of 24 hours. They will not be allowed to the state funeral. That is for dignitaries. It is for heads of state. It is for royal family members from around the world. We know that, for example, U.S. President Joe Biden and First Lady Dr. Jill Biden will be here, and so many other heads of state. But what we're seeing right now, just the other side of the river, in fact, here, the River Thames, is the first people, well, they have been queuing for days already to get that opportunity to see this casket and to pay their respects in person. That period will begin in a few hours' time, once that casket is inside Westminster Hall.
Philip Crowther, thank you so much. Philip is reporting for us from Westminster Hall in London. We do appreciate your reporting. Well, Queen Elizabeth's death is renewing debate about Britain's legacy of colonialism around the world. She became queen in Kenya, and her first overseas visit as monarch was to South Africa. So from the African continent and Asia to Australia and the Caribbean, people have taken to social media in recent days, some paying tribute to the late monarch, others recalling painful chapters of British rule in their countries. In Kenya, some analysts say while Queen Elizabeth helped steer the end of Britain's rule in the East African nation, colonialism left lasting wounds. Juma Majanga reports for us from Nairobi.
She became a queen while on a visit to Kenya and went on to be the last colonial monarch for Africa. Her accession to the throne came as African colonies clamored for independence. Queen Elizabeth II had to supervise the elimination of the British colonial empire.
She was able to adjust to the reality of the imperial decline and then transform that imperial decline as if to a good thing, something common that people can be part of. wanted to be part of. That is the Commonwealth.
To some Africans, the British colonial rule is synonymous with exploitation. They blame the Queen, the representative of the British interests, for the atrocities during that period.
I personally will not forget that I was incarcerated for 7 years. I cannot forget I was put together with my father. I cannot forget I left my children for 7 years without food, without education. That I will never forget.
But with territorial colonialism now decades gone, memories of the wrongs of British rule in Africa are fading.
She was many things to many people. To the colonial subjects, at the time of colonialism, she was symbol of the evil that was colonialism. With independence, she was able to transform herself to a likable person. And as a person, she was likable.
Queen Elizabeth was widely admired and seen as a role model by many on the continent.
The legacy she's left will really keep her name deeply rooted in the hearts of generations to come.
For me, it's just sad. I can't at least, I take it personally, but I mean, it's sad for people around the world and especially for England.
I've never known any other ruler last that long. So for this now to have happened, well, it only means that every man has an end.
Analysts say Queen Elizabeth's biggest legacy is the creation of the Commonwealth. And with the death of the Queen, the future of that legacy now lies with the new king, King Charles III. Juma Majanga for VOA News, Nairobi.
Well, joining me now to discuss this a little more is Piwo Kushle Mnyandu. He's a professor of African Studies at Howard University here in Washington. He joins me via Skype. Piwo Kushle, thank you so much for being here. Well, before I get into this discussion, I just want to pull up a graphic. And this shows you the size of the British Empire when Queen Elizabeth II became Queen. And this next graphic gives you an idea of what the United Kingdom looks like today. Of course, there are realms, so-called realms within the Commonwealth, but it has shrunk significantly. And Piwo Kushle, the Queen's death has prompted so many questions about the British monarchy, not just about its past and its present, but also about its future. And when you look at the sort of discussion that's going on today and the relationship between Britain and African nations, particularly former colonies, is it just the history that is complicated, Piwo Kushle, or is the current relationship there complicated as well?
Both, Heidi, it's good to be with you and your viewers. Both are complicated. In fact, on the second map that you put of the United Kingdom, I'd say I always teach this to my students. By size, the United Kingdom is roughly the size of Michigan, the one state of Michigan in the United States. So there's always been a counterintuitiveness to colonialism, that a country the size of Michigan could actually eclipse others and have as its realm or property or colonies such amazing, depending on who you are, or vast accumulation of properties and territory. Well, if you are someone in Africa, depending on whether you are privileged or not, depending on whether you suffer from unemployment or not, you may have a very different view about the Queen and the events of this week.
The royalty or any sort of royal family has always felt a lot of pressure, especially when people are experiencing times of economic distress. And people calls for a reckoning of the British Empire has, of course, been more pronounced on social media, not just across Africa, across the world. Some saying, of course, there are those who say, do not speak ill of the dead. Now is not the time to talk about the monarchy's role in British colonialism and the brutality that went with it. Others saying, of course, now is precisely the time.
Yes, you are right, Heidi. It's like, as we expected, I would say, there's a sharp divergence of views. We found out a few things during this couple of days. The British still love their monarch. the British are, they still are very sensitive about their monarchy, and the British feel quite vulnerable right now. And the things like the arrest of certain protesters, for example, during the cortege in England, have erupted some parts of Twitter, especially in Africa. A cynical view came up that said, well, see, some things in very democratic country of the United Kingdom are still not allowed, including some free speech. However, though, some African leaders have cautioned that between countries, in Nigeria and the United Kingdom and so on and so forth, there must always be sensitivity around these issues, precisely because the British people still feel kind of sensitive about it. And England, let's face it, is the fifth largest economy in the world. So as such, an economy worth $2.83 trillion, it's an important country. And so some people have said, well, we must treat it as such, especially on days like this.
Well, it does, Pio Kushli, appear quite confusing to some when you see some African leaders, many of whom know firsthand, or the generation just before theirs, know firsthand what it was like to live either under British colonialism or live in the after effects of it. But they've been sending tributes to the Queen, and of course this is very respectful, it's statesmanlike. Nigeria's President Muhammadu Buhari, in his tribute, spoke of Queen Elizabeth's unique and wonderful 70-year reign. Why that disconnect, only showing one part? Can we expect African leaders at some other point to bring up the sort of the full picture and the other story?
I would say yes, but cautiously, because we must remember, Heidi, African leaders are leaders of countries, and countries have interests, and those interests are still quite wedded to a large extent, depending on which African country you are, to London, to the United Kingdom, and they must tread with care. On the other hand, however, there is something called statesmanship that at least they are playing into right now. Indeed, we see an example of this closer to home with former President Barack Obama. Well, he was one of the first people to send condolences and had quite a warm letter. Well, guess what? During his presidency, President Obama was excoriated in the British press because people said his grandfather in Kenya had actually been imprisoned in a colonial British jail in Kenya. And the media in London used to excoriate him because they thought he still harbored grudges for that era. And of course, he has since put those to rest. So we can see that this goes on everywhere where kind of like the British history, British legacy is concerned.
And speaking of Kenya, where wounds are particularly raw, especially because of the Mau Mau uprising we saw, and we see real mixed feelings amongst people. But some are saying, and we saw even in the story earlier, that Queen Elizabeth, yes, she symbolized the brutality of British colonialism, but then she also came to represent change and was someone who accepted change, and that one who tried, she was one who tried to move with the times. People talk about her likability. So I wonder, will Charles, King Charles, now be seen also as a symbol of British brutality, or will he be able to move past a lot of that, or will he be seen through a different lens, I guess I'm asking?
Heidi, I would say there's a cynical view. A cynical view would be there's always a legacy, and this legacy is not tied to a human being. This legacy is tied to a country and the outcomes of that country's domination over time. The extent to which then that domination is seen as just or unjust will always determine how people see it. That's a cynical view. An optimistic view, of course, would be that King Charles lives in vastly different times. King Charles has been the one who has kind of thrown a warm, you know, welcome to our own a multiracial Meghan Markle, who married into the British family and has actually endured some kind of very tough times from the British public. And it was King Charles who invited them back, which King Charles will rule, and how he understands the times.
Pio Kushli, we Speaking in Ghana in 2018, then Prince Charles said his country's role in the transatlantic slave trade was, quote, an atrocity. And he's also spoken out on other occasions about the need for Britain to really acknowledge its deeds in the past. But that's quite a long way from an apology, isn't it?
It is, Heidi. In fact, you and I think last year appreciated a German apology for the Herero, and it was quite a measured one. It said what we recognize today as genocide, we'd like to apologize for it. So the apologies will keep coming, and I can bet you and your viewers that in the next 20 years, we will get a stronger apology. Why? Because the times demand it. And I'm going to actually trust that King Charles will actually recognize the times he's living in and will start to do what the Germans have been doing in Namibia. And I'm optimistic about that.
People, Kushla, stay with me. We've got Kenneth Mwenda joining us after the break. We are going to take a short break here. And when we come back, we'll just continue our discussion on the life and legacy of Queen Elizabeth II. Stay with us. Covering the continent every day from east to west, north to south. That's VOA Africa 54. We bring you the latest news and development from Africa. Politics, health, tech, and everything in between. We're on it. Our network of reporters and analysts are on hand to add perspective to all our reports. Join me, Esther Githui-Ewart, Monday through Friday, right here on VOA's Africa 54. Welcome back to Straight Talk Africa here on The Voice of America. And we continue our focus on the death of Britain's Queen Elizabeth and the debate around the monarchy's past, present and the future relationship, especially with African nations, which many of whom are former colonies. And we asked our Facebook followers about this. We asked, do you think the new monarch, King Charles, should engage Africa differently to boost relations between the empire and the continent? And here is what some of you said. Augustine Capella Bolungu from Zambia says, tell him to rule in the modern world today where he should expect less, give out more and listen more, even slimming the empire. Isaac Denams says, Africa is already in neo-colonialism. Its leaders still connive with their former masters to share the people's resources. And then this comment from Fode Brima, the same trend will continue. Africa didn't prosper in the Commonwealth under King Charles. African members should withdraw as there is no wealth to share. That is a very interesting point and leads me to my next question. But first, I want to welcome here to the conversation Kenneth Mwenda. He's a professor of law at the University of the Western Cape in South Africa and happens to be right here in studio with me. Kenneth, welcome to the conversation.
Thank you so much, Heather.
And on Skype, we have with us Piwa Kushle Mnyandu, a professor of African studies at Howard University. Gentlemen, I want to get to this point about the Commonwealth and yes, particularly this part about the wealth that is to share. But Kenneth, the Commonwealth is referred to as a political association. What's the political association that is needed here, and what does this club do for African countries?
Yeah, thanks, Heidi. The Commonwealth is an intergovernmental organization, and primarily to promote cooperation between member states. But there are no obligations between or amongst member states, unlike the United Nations. So whilst the Commonwealth has a charter for Commonwealth, which just talks to aspirations, there is no a treaty that sets up the Commonwealth. It's sort of a gentleman's agreement where you come to the table, have a cup of tea, and then discuss about various issues that can help move your countries forward. So recently, for example, we have had Togo and Gabon join the Commonwealth.
Correct.
And before that, we had Rwanda. These were mainly Francophone countries. Initially, the Commonwealth started off around 1926, mainly for Anglophone, former English colonies and protectorates. So the number now stands at 56. So like I said, there are aspirations to move forward in human rights, democracy, education, gender, and so forth. So that's in contrast to what you find with, for example, international financial institutions which will grant loans for development or grants for development. That's a different scenario. So this is more for governance and political aspirations.
Pio Kushle, what does it tell you that the Commonwealth has expanded in Africa, countries with little to no historical relationship with Britain, now joining the Commonwealth?
Well, I think, African countries and African people in general are a fellowship people. I think if we look at the circumstances under which Rwanda joined, it had fallen out with its former colony, France, and they changed their official language to English, which has been beneficial for the growth of their economy. So coming into an English-speaking realm for some countries is an economic decision than a political one. In the case of the other two, it helps to join a body that has the largest number of African nations. So some of these are actually local political decisions, and some of them also are to extract certain, concessions if they're undergoing negotiations with France-Afrique or, in other words, other French-connected bodies.
Gentlemen, I've got very little time, so I'll give about a minute or so to each of you on this. What is the single most important thing that King Charles III can now do to strengthen or improve relations with African countries? What can he do differently?
I think Charles III is filling in, first of all, big shoes. Queen Elizabeth had, the reactions are sort of mixed in terms of, how people have reacted to her passing. The good sides and, of course, the criticisms. But I think Charles has to define his own leadership signature. Queen Elizabeth, for example, despite the sort of dark history of the British Empire, contributed somewhat to the liberation of Southern Africa, using soft power in the background, very diplomatically. For example, if you look at her relationships as the monarch with President Mugabe, Mugabe would criticize Tony Blair and Gordon, but not the Queen. They each had
that.
Mutual respect,
yes,
for one another. So Mugabe was able to distinguish between the monarch and the government, as certain decisions of the government are not necessarily reflective of the Queen or the King himself. So Charles has to pick up from there.
Oh, we remember Robert Mugabe, Tony Blair, we'll never forget that. Theo Kushle, what's your take?
My take is the times are different. The United Kingdom is no longer the power it used to be. There are other powers on the African continent with which the Africans have to contend. But the United Kingdom is still the fifth largest economy, and it holds a lot of sway, especially financially. The City of London is still quite influential. And sitting at the top of, at the helm of this is a head of state, King Charles. But there's also always a British Prime Minister to deal with on these things. So the United Kingdom is still an important country. However, it's not as important as it used to be. And it's something sometimes we've seen this week the British struggle to come to terms with.
These are interesting times, gentlemen. We'll see how King Charles takes over now and leads in the footsteps of his mother, or will he do it his own way? Kenneth Mwenda, thank you so much for being here. Pio Kushle Mnyandu, thank you for joining us. I'll be back, gentlemen, and I'll want to have you as guests on the show again. Thank you so much for your time.
You're welcome.
And that is our show this week. Thank you again to everyone who contributed to our show, to my guests. And thank you to our affiliate stations now airing Straight Talk Africa across the African continent. And thanks to you for joining us on television, radio, and online. Thank you for always watching and always listening. I'll see you next time. As we say in South Africa, Mbakashle. Goodbye. Take care.